This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 22nd of February 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where this week we're spinning the globe 180 degrees and we're zooming down on Australia. The March issue of Monocle magazine has just hit newsstands and it's a festival of all that is grand about Down Under. Within these 29 minutes, we'll do the following things. We'll speak to the best record label in Australia. How do they find the next big things?
The internet is what it is and it's a very much a global place, so I think it matters less where you're from and matters a lot more what you sound like, which is refreshing and exciting.
We'll speak to a bona fide Aussie broadcasting legend, Miff Warhurst from Sydney's Double J. We'll have a big glug of a newly bottled TV sitcom, Was Plonk, all about wine, as fun to make as it sounds like it should have been. And we'll investigate the intriguing editorial world of the West Australian. Some say it's the most profitable paper down under, some say that. Good grief, Perth's a long way away from anywhere. News from the world's most isolated city to finish. Australia it is, all to come here on Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. First of all, to inspect Australia's increasing cultural might, we're going to marvel at a seriously great record label, Future Classics, in Sydney. Sure, they've got top acts like Flume, Flight Facilities and Chet Faker on their roster, all fair enough, but they've also moved with the times, often ahead of the times, to be a management company, a music publisher and a booking agent. Tough times in the music biz call for imaginative thinking. Ed Scholl is the label manager at Future Classics, and here he is to tell us how to future-proof the business.
Future Classic is best known as a label that's definitely the most public-facing part of the business, and I guess that's because it's the part that outwardly or publicly produces the music and releases the music, which still today is an integral part of being a recording artist and a successful touring artist. But yeah, I guess the label really just kind of powers the releases and puts out records and does that sort of thing. It's obviously a changing landscape, and royalties aren't, you know, it's not the same industry that it was 20, 30 years ago. But yeah, definitely being a label is, I guess, more about trying to get more people listening to an artist's music and more people interacting with it, whether that's buying it or streaming it, or, you know, Shazamming it, listening to it on the radio, whatever it is. Yeah, it's just about kind of trying to make the most out of an artist's recorded music.
Okay, music publishing. This is always the area which people that think they know about the music industry scratch their heads and have to start Googling things. Tell us about your role as a publisher, Ed.
Well, I guess this is where it gets a little bit technical. There's two sets of rights when you talk about music. There's the performer and there's also the songwriter, and often songwriters are the same person that records a song. Like when, you know, Flume writes a song, he writes it and he records it and puts it out. But sometimes there are people who are songwriters who aren't the performing artist, who don't tour, who kind of prefer to live in the studio and work with other people. So I guess what a publisher does is they work with the songwriters. We as a music publisher will try and put some of our songwriters with other songwriters to create new kind of partnerships, or also try to do brand opportunities like getting your song on an ad. It's about trying to put people's songwriting and compositions in front of more people as well.
And presumably, if you've got your finger in these different pies, you can sort of future-proof yourself as much as anyone can in the music industry these days, Ed. That, you know, you can hear a great new act at a festival, you can see them live first, then you can kind of have a chat to them about a bit of management, then something might, like a label deal might come up. Let's talk about some of the names on your roster, Ed. Do you tend to find homegrown talent, or do you take people from all over the place, but you kind of deal with them when they're in Australia for that regional industry? How does it work?
It's less a conscientious decision to be like, we're going to sign Australians, and more that's the really great music that we've kind of interacted with and stumbled upon, or, you know, discovered in whatever way. So I think we certainly prefer to think of ourselves as a global company, but also definitely a champion of music. We're based in Sydney, and so are a lot of our artists. We also have artists that are from Melbourne and from Brisbane and from Perth in Australia, and then, you know, we've got Chrome Sparks and IO live in New York, and as does Chet Faker now. We've done kind of deals with some UK artists as well, Karma Kid and Bodhi, and yeah, I guess I think it's, we're absolutely a proud Australian company and proud to work with Australian music, but I think, yeah, we kind of prefer to think on a global level. And now, you know, the internet is what it is, and it's a very much a global place. So I think it matters less where you're from and matters a lot more what you sound like, which is refreshing and exciting.
All right, we'll drink to that, this end of the phone line, Ed. An interesting area of your business, which is that of a booking agent. I mean, obviously, the live scene in Australia is very exciting. Festivals, we love to think we have a thriving festival culture here in the UK. Indeed, we do, but it is always fighting against the weather. You don't tend to have that problem, at least in the popular imagination in Australia. Maybe you can give us maybe you can kick the tires of the festival scene in Australia and tell us who the big players are and how you guys interact with that.
Sure. Well, I guess something that's front of mind, having just come off the end of the Laneway tour. Laneway Festival is a really great kind of festival that tours nationally around Australia, also does a show in Auckland in New Zealand and does a Singapore date as well. We just had Flume headline that festival. It finished up a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, I think that's a fantastic kind of, it's very much champions new and exciting music. So there's lots of kind of boutique one-day festivals that are popping up. There's great ones in Sydney, like Outside In, and this Melbourne Music Week, which is a really great thing down in Melbourne that's happening, booking lots of kind of underground and electronic acts and providing opportunities for kind of people from, whether it's electronic subgroups in different territories and different countries, to tour to Australia and kind of interact with their pockets of fans down here.
Let's finally just name check a few of the artists that are on Future Classic, Ed. You've mentioned Flume. I have my own Wafia, and you also have Flight Facilities, who I'm a fan of. Not necessarily pandering to my tastes, but merely your own and those of our listeners.
Wafia, who you mentioned, is someone really excited about this year. She's a Brisbane-based kind of vocalist, singer-songwriter who's doing some really exciting stuff. We raid on land. Feast on strong, wasting away, we do all that is wrong. Someone who she's working with and who she's had a really great kind of creative partnership with is Taku. Yeah, he's this kind of amazing entrepreneur who's a producer, kind of created this whole scene on SoundCloud, and also kind of runs like an online sneaker community. He's a super interesting dude. Someone on the other end of the spectrum, maybe Kenton / Demon, a Danish duo who we're releasing a couple of EPs for this year, who make really kind of amazing futuristic electronic kind of club music. But yeah, there's lots going on. I could go on for hours.
We're going to move seamlessly from music to music radio now. Miff Warhurst is a well-loved Aussie broadcaster with around 20 years of experience under her belt. She started her career as a music-thirsty teenager at Melbourne's public radio station Triple R. After quickly learning the rope, she headed to Sydney to present shows on Australia's favourite radio station Triple J, and then onto sister station Double J, where she currently hosts the lunchtime show. Monocle's Daniel Jacopelli spoke to her about why music broadcasting is so important to Australia.
Welcome to Double J.
Hello, everyone. I'm Miff Warhurst, and I'm so excited to be here today, live at the Kelvin Club in Melbourne.
Triple J is a national youth broadcaster, so given Australia is such a huge country, it's a way of connecting all young people in the country. They have something that they can all tune into at the same time and connect and be a part of. And that sense of community, I think, really creates something special here. And that's why people feel a lot of ownership over Triple J. It's a very special entity. I can't imagine there's much like it really in the world, just given the size of this country. To think that you can go from Melbourne to Perth, which is one of the hugest travel distance on a continent possible, and yet here are kids listening to the same music and having, you know, the same conversations. It's really kind of united the country in a way, particularly from a youth perspective.
Yeah, and radio broadcasting in general in Australia seems to a non-Australian to be quite a, it's really important, isn't it? I mean, it's much more important than it is in many other places in the world. Why is that?
Well, I think because in Australia there are such huge distances between places, it is very important. If you are living in a regional area, which I did grow up in, you are a long way from, you know, a capital city. 6 hours would be a small travel time for a lot of people to get to a major capital city. So the local radio station is actually very important because it does give local news. But then you have something like the national broadcaster, like Triple J, which will also make you feel like you're included in a conversation that is far larger than perhaps that small community. And the ABC is really great because it brings it all together. So it connects people in so many different ways all across the country.
And Triple J, I mean, looking broadly at the radio industry, I mean, they do this thing every year, the hottest 100 countdown, that's hugely popular. I mean, maybe you could tell us a bit about the importance of that in Australia.
Oh, the hottest 100, it's a very significant thing on the Australian musical calendar. It happens on Australia Day, which is a public holiday, and people structure their entire days around listening to this countdown. And it's a general vote, so anyone can vote, and it's one of the biggest public vote for the best song of the previous year in the world. I think they got something like 11 million voters for this year's. It's huge. It's absolutely huge and quite significant for the acts that are included, I would imagine. And people have parties to listen to the countdown. People get really involved in it, and it's almost overtaken the actual public holiday for which the day is for. It's almost become synonymous with that day. I guess you could consider it hottest 100 day, almost. But it's very, very significant and such a huge, huge thing for Triple J as well.
So since we have a music expert right now, an Australian music expert in particular, I mean, maybe you could name us three artists from Australia, music artists, bands, singers, songwriters, that maybe global listeners should start listening to.
There's so much here and so much to share. It's almost impossible to give you three or narrow it down to three. I have to say there's a Sydney band that I've just grown to love over the last couple of years. They have a new album out called High. They're called Royal Headache. They're a garage rock and roll group from Sydney. Their latest album, High, it's just full of rough punk rock and roll, garage rock and roll gems. It's an absolute beauty, and they're wonderful live as well. So I think that's definitely a band. If you like that kind of thing, definitely a band you should look out for. The next I would suggest is a new artist, in fact, out of Sydney via Zambia, interestingly enough. Her name is Sampa the Great, and she's a really interesting hip-hop artist. Run around, I know y'all are really feeling me, and I'm obliged to be a friend, not an enemy. Even though don't give up all what you think of me, I'm obliged to be a friend, not an enemy. And I smile. She's definitely going to be going places in the next couple of years. I can't wait until the rest of the world discovers her. She's quite fascinating. And if you're after a sort of female singer-songwriter vibe, someone like Jess Ribeiro, who is formerly from the Northern Territory, which is one of the northern central states here in Australia, now living in Melbourne, she just released an album last year called Kill It Yourself. And Jess Ribeiro has just got that beautiful smoky kind of really dark element. I think she's definitely one to look out for as well. Hold it down, quiet and firm. When she
bleeds, let it all out, kill it yourself. That was Double J's Miff Warhurst speaking to Monocle 24's Danny Jacopelli. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and this week we're down under for an Australia special. We've already touched on the country's radio broadcast industry, but now we're going to talk TV with a case study in how to get your show on air. Like many countries around the world, Australia is feeling the pinch when it comes to supporting the creative industries. Recently, massive cuts to the arts funding body Australia Council and film body Screen Australia mean that ambitious film and TV projects just can't get off the ground and onto screens. However, Monocle reporter Dan Illich found one Sydney TV producer who successfully bypassed the traditional routes for funding altogether by turning to brands to help make her sitcom, Plonk, which follows a TV crew as they try to put together a show all about wine. Georgie Lewin is said producer, and she and Dan sat down to talk about the programme's business model over a bottle of wine overlooking Bondi Beach. Tough life.
Here we go. I'm serving you a bowl of Bachata Barrels. There's a nice rosé.
Plonk is a show that we like to think of as a television show first and foremost. It is a comedy show set in the world of wine about a hapless, inept little television crew going about trying to make a really serious wine show, but just failing miserably along the way.
Hey mate, it's Nathan, it's 8:30 and I'm at your house. Where are you?
What are you guys actually doing up here?
And we're making a wine show.
We're making a wine show.
You said this was going to be an arty wine show.
Yes, I know I did.
Where are we off to first?
Who's this?
Oh, I'm the expert.
Never heard of him, sounds like a dickhead.
Wow, yes, this is really happening.
You've done two seasons, one in New South Wales, one in South Australia. That is actually a very rare thing for an Australian sitcom to go to a second series. What do you think it is about the idea of Plonk that makes it so attractive to people who are funding it?
The reason why it could exist in both New South Wales and South Australia is essentially they're like sets for us. New South Wales is like a big, beautiful, rolling hills type of, you know, set, which has its own characters existing there. And then South Australia is similarly vast and incredibly eclectic in different ways. When we're referring to a branded comedy, I guess we don't actually have any branding, you know, in the show apart from the locations themselves.
When you are talking about a branded comedy, like, how do you have a branded comedy but not have any brands in the show?
It is pitched and engaged with as a TV show. So the first series was funded by Destination New South Wales. So the money came from the New South Wales government, and the brief was just make people come to their regions. And we figured that we could have that conversation really upfront early on with Destination New South Wales and say, look, we know comedy, we know television, so trust us and we'll make it appealing, and people, as a result, will go there. It's not necessary for there to be, you know, Destination New South Wales flags or logos. It's purely just about making it appealing and enticing.
And what about South Australia? Was that a similar approach?
Yeah, the South Australian series was very much, we went about it the same way. They obviously had the template of the first series and understood that, hold on a minute, yeah, these guys know what they're doing in terms of making a fun television show that creates excitement and getting people to go to the region, and they just jumped on it. It's exceptionally effective use of money, because the reach that we had as a series, from being in the first series, we were on YouTube, Channel 10, 11, Qantas, Australia Network at the time, and for season two, it was picked up by Channel 9, so it was on Stan, YouTube, Channel 9, Qantas, it was also on Virgin, and it's on Australia Plus. In order to get context of what Plonk is, you go back and watch the series from the beginning. So for New South Wales, they've kind of scored big on the idea of a second season, because we've had a whole bunch more traction going back to watch the first series. So they have a whole new, renewed, you know, lot of exposure. And then same thing would happen if we'd made a season three.
Get it? What's wrong with male winemakers?
Nothing. It's just,
isn't, you know, a little sexist?
Josh, we're just trying to differentiate ourselves from every other wine show.
Yeah, you know, episode one, female winemakers. Episode two,
maybe Asians.
Isn't that racist?
No, we'll be talking to them.
Josh,
it's inclusive.
Just do your job and find us a female winemaker.
I don't think he's ever found a female in his life.
How do you go about going, well, we've tried to sell this idea to a television network, they're not interested in it, how can we get this made?
The process was initially making a pilot, and getting a big heavyweight of the industry on board. We had Bruce Tyrrell from Tyrrell's Winery, which is a huge Australian brand that's, you know, largely international as well. Bruce Tyrrell is a bit of a legend in the industry. So for us, it validated the concept, it validated the wine makers' acceptance of what we were doing, which is quite a departure from the original, or I guess conventional, way of going about marketing wine. So first stage is a pilot. Second stage is desperately shopping that pilot around, trying to convince networks, you know, industry bodies that this has got promise. This little show is a little show that could. And you know what? It was tough.
Action. The cellar door is just about the only place on earth where spitting in public is considered polite. Oh, my bad. We might need to move this forward. Can you tell there's wine there? You can? Oh, I am so I had no idea.
Okay, go for it. Great, we got it. Moving on.
That's how you do it.
Such a waste of good wine.
I just think in terms of calling it branded content, I'm pretty passionate about it not being classified as that. And I think that that's where we sort of take a step backwards in making TV, because it's not perceived as content. But, you know, with Screen Australia holding this up as a sort of example to the next generation of filmmakers in order to how to finance television, you know, this is a template for moving forward. And so I think that we need to understand that it all comes down to the initial conversation with the investors, with the principal partners, that they enable you to have creative control, and then it's a television show.
There's an old saying that no vintage tastes quite as good as the one that has a little bit of your own sweat mixed in. Now, that's obviously a metaphorical saying. Mixing wine and sweat is highly unsanitary.
Listen it up, Team Plonk, hey? Let's go handheld, let's live. Let's just pump the whole show right up.
It'll be fun, Barossa, South Australia, wine.
Mate, we are trying to make some good TV here.
To pump, guys.
Ah! It's gonna get a lot of buzz. Woo!
That was Georgie Lewin, producer of Australian sitcom Plonk, both series of which are available to watch on YouTube. How do you make the news interesting from Australia's and the world's most isolated city? In Perth, the capital of a state more than 10 times larger than the UK, but with a population of just over 2.5 million, the one and only local daily, the West Australian, rules the rather substantial roost. And amidst a reasonably sunny economic and political outlook, telling riveting news stories can be a challenging business. Yet in an age where technological boundaries are being pushed harder than the nightly deadlines, the word on everyone's lips of this news floor is convergence. Recently, the West fused its editorial floor with a team from Channel 7's nightly TV news bulletin, turning the whole building into a multi-platform lab of multimedia. Our correspondent Liam Aldous, of course, dropped by to watch what happens when two editorial realms collide.
As far as generating content goes, state political editor Gareth Parker has a pretty tough job. The prosperous state is far removed from Australia's East Coast hub of national action, and his audience is spread over thousands upon thousands of square kilometres. But then again, this is a state that has always gone its own way, and spinning local stories is a bit of a relative science.
Well, I wouldn't say we forget about the national story. I mean, most of our national media tends to be based out of the Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra view of the world. So there is room in a very diverse Australian media marketplace for a West Australian point of view. Local people are looking for local stories, local advocacy, local solutions to their unique local problems.
So, all things considered, the average newsday narrative in WA involves a rather substantial dose of sunshine and lollipops. But what happens when the dramatic pulling power video is thrown into the mix?
The plunging price of petrol below $1 a litre.
A 7 News exclusive, Molly Meldrum tells why doctors thought he'd never walk again.
A good old lightning bolt caught on camera is bound to spice up any news bulletin. And now that the jointly owned newspaper and TV news division are basically roommates, journalists are suddenly learning to think more visually than ever.
It's really exciting newsroom. Everyone understands that the future is convergence. And I think what we have now here is a real opportunity to be at the forefront of that. I don't think we've figured out exactly how it all works yet. I don't think anyone in the world media has, but I think that we've got as good an opportunity as anyone to try and get the mix right. The message from our bosses is to create content once and then distribute it over all available platforms.
This is 7 News. Tonight, firebug fears Ellenbrook residents in a new fire battle as more blazes break out in the hills.
Police probe death threats over Perth's shark cull.
Officers attacked. The biggest challenge for all media, whether it's television, newspapers, or whatever, is audience. In terms of newspapers, that means trying to retain your circulation and your readership, and in television, obviously, your viewers. Without that, you haven't got a business.
This is Bob Cronin, the building's head honcho, or group editor, according to the title on his glass office door. Surveying a vast media landscape that includes the West, 20 affiliated smaller local mastheads, and now the 7 TV News, the straight-talking Aussie strongman believes convergence has put the paper on the right road.
So we've got reporters in Port Hedland, in Karratha, in Broome, in Kununurra, in Geraldton, in Albany. And from the integrated point of view, that's very handy for us because, you know, if there's a fire breaks out in Katanning, we've got a reporter in Katanning working for the newspaper. But all he needs to do is to get his iPhone and shoot 90 seconds of video and email that to Channel 7, and that can be on their 6 o'clock news. Now, the other television channels can't compete with that because they don't have people all over the state, and we do. We're trying to develop reporters, photographers, you know, media people generally, who are skilled across the platforms.
Some days it's great to be alive.
But it can't be all good news, even if this irresistibly upbeat 7 News jingle from 1987 begs to differ. So I dropped by Gareth Parker's desk one last time to pry a little deeper about a particularly red-hot, okay, maybe lukewarm issue that often lurks beneath the state surface, that lingering threat of Western Australian secessionism.
I think the secessionist mentality is something that does exist. I don't think anyone seriously advocates secession, however, if that explains it adequately. There is a view from people who grew up here and who are from here that Western Australia is misunderstood by the rest of the nation to the extent that it's understood at all. And there has always been a feeling of grievance that our unique economic structure and our considerations are not well understood by this Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra axis where, you know, most of the country is run and where most of the money and the employment are.
Is it kind of a chest-thumping identity thing?
I think it can be that. I think the paper, for its entire history, which is, you know, 175 years old, has always taken its cue from the masthead, which is the West Australian. For better or for worse, I think it's generally been a newspaper that's advocated for the state's interests over the national interest, and it's taken a pretty parochial view, I think, generally speaking.
Sometimes you want to stand and cheer. Sometimes you wonder what we're doing here.
All right, so not the dramatic scoop I was after, but all in all, a pretty good media yarn. For Monocle in Perth, I'm Liam Aldous.
Watch the news with us each night. See the day as it happened.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. We hope you enjoyed our whistle-stop tour of Australia's off-the-beaten-track gems of culture and media. Be sure to pick up the latest copy of Monocle magazine, which is completely dedicated to Australia and why you should take a peek down under. It's available to all good newsstands around the world. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was Holly. That's not a knife. This is a knife. Fisher, join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much for tuning in.